This is WHFR Dearborn, and now it's time for a public affairs show, the new WHFR Journal. This is the new WHFR Journal. We are live today from Henry Ford Community College with local news and alternative views. And it's so exciting, of course, to review a big-time Democratic event. That's right, Democracy in Action. We had an election here, November the 2nd, and the results are in. Now, you may have heard in general, of course, in the other news networks around, but of course, local news and specifically local numbers. That's something that we can cover here. We're going to be joined in the studio today by three of our WHFR staff to give you their analyses, not mere opinions, of what has happened in the news and who's doing what to whom and so on. We have, in fact, a special guest in the studio to start our show off today, but don't want to keep you hanging there as the commercial stations do. Election winners in Dearborn. Okay, in Dearborn, you need to know this, for governor, Snyder beat out Bonero by 2,000 votes. Actually, 1,300 votes, so it was relatively close. John Conyers reelected as representative to D.C. John Dingell lost in Dearborn. That's right. But he won big in Ypsilanti, Ann Arbor, and Monroe, and so he got reelected to the 16th District to D.C. In Dearborn and the 15th District, Michigan representative to Lansing is really just the city of Dearborn boundaries, which is unusual when districts are gerrymandered, but it turns out 15th District is pretty much just the city of Dearborn boundaries. George Duraney had about a 2,200 vote lead over Suzanne Serini, 12,400 over 10,200. Very interesting to me, yours truly, Daryl Smith of the U.S. Taxpayers Party, who was the only challenger to the Democrats and Republican there, he got 1,007. And, of course, we do believe it was the WHFR bump that did that, since he came on this show and got his big-time interview and got a chance to explain what he stood for. A very nice guy, and he spoke very clearly and specifically about what he wanted to do. And I think, in a democracy, that's what we want to hear rather than all this negative campaigning and slamming of the candidates. But he got actually 4% of the vote. And you might say, well, 4%, that's not that's a lot for any so-called third party or minority party, any party other than the Dems and Republicans. So congratulations to Daryl. I think it was the first time he ran for office, too. And I'm glad we helped to get the word out, not only about Daryl, but we had Suzanne Serini on the show and George Duraney, too, of course. Gary Warrenchuk got reelected, Bob Ficano, and this is, again, just in Dearborn, just to keep you interested. Benny Napoleon, again, Ficano, Napoleon, Wayne County. Susan Hubbard, reelected as a judge. William Hulkran, no competition for him. And very, very tight race. Jim Schoolmaster got reelected to the Dearborn Board of Education and Henry Ford Community College Board of Trustees. It's one of the same. By only a small number of votes over McDonald. And that was extremely close. That I didn't write down here the exact number. I have another piece of paper, but it shows you really should make sure you vote. Every vote counts, especially not in those presidential election years. We pretty much agreed with the state on no constitutional convention, keep felons out of jobs for out of some felons out of some jobs for 20 years. A so-called anti-Kwame. Proposal. We voted yes here and also yes on renewing the parks millage for Wayne County. And we'll go on with more of that. We have even a new Dearborn Heights council person, Netta Piggian, with us later on in the show. I'm joined in the studio, and they are adjusting their headphones now, by my co-host today. That's Dennis Reimars. Hi, Dennis.
Hi, welcome. How are you?
Okay, it's mic check time.
Mic check.
Yes. It's not Mike, it's Dennis, but Dennis on the mic. And Amy Powers, again, our WHFR news director.
Good afternoon. How are you, Jay?
There she is. I'm fine. We're great. But even better than all of us is the always exciting Henry Ford Community College Associate Dean of Counseling, Diane Green, is with us today to talk about a specific workshop seminar opportunity from the Counseling Division. But so, Diane, welcome to the Journal again.
Always thank good you. To,
always
thank
good
you.
To have
it's great
you
being
back.
Here. Great seeing everybody again.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Is everybody okay. Doing good?
I think
yes.
So.
Yes.
I think so.
Great.
Okay. You know, first of all, Diane, we have been mentioning here because we got some sort of email internally about it, but Henry Ford Community College is already registering for the winter semester starting on January 10th, aren't we?
Absolutely.
But it's only online right now.
Absolutely.
Isn't that true?
Absolutely. And the the percentage of students who have registered is outstanding. It definitely has surpassed the registration numbers for the same period of time last year. So
wow.
Students are getting it, that they can go online, they can do this. And
right now online, is it only for current students or after you've been admitted, then you can go online?
Well, what happens, it's mainly for current students, but new students who have been advised can do that unless they're registering for classes which have prerequisites like an English class. Then they will have to have assistance in doing that or waiting until
they need advice or maybe a placement test, something
absolutely.
Of that sort to make sure they get in the correct class. And then open enrollment, even coming in person, would be later this month?
24th.
Right before Thanksgiving.
Yes. Great timing.
Good luck.
Good luck. Is that Wednesday the 24th? That's the day before Thanksgiving.
It is.
We'll have two or three people come by, I think, for that. But you might want to come by and make note of that. So if you need to get admitted, if you haven't been here before, that's still possible. Everybody's ready to do that for you. And then you can get, if you need the extra advising, once that's done, then you can get into the online enrollment and jump right in there. Because with so many students coming here this fall, I think was the largest enrollment of fall we've ever had, close to 18,000 plus students I saw at last count.
Yeah, I think I saw it was 18,994, mm-hmm. and that was including individuals who are going through our continuing education program.
Thank goodness we got the parking lots finished for them.
Yeah, okay.
Got a place to park for free, by the way. And counseling has, of course, people there to assist them. How would they go about getting a counselor's assistance on let's say, choosing classes or getting placement in classes or even just admissions? Through the website? Do they send an email? Do they just make a phone call? What would you
suggest?
Well,
I encourage a phone call. They can call 313-845-9611, mm-hmm. and the clerical staff will assist them in setting up an appointment. We're on appointment basis at this point, half an hour appointments. Brand new students, first time to any college, we're really asking that they go online and sign up for our orientations.
Uh-huh.
And our first one is actually scheduled for November the 18th.
Okay.
That's a Thursday. It's 9:30 in the morning, so we encourage them to do that so that they can get on in and we can get them registered.
It's all very exciting starting a new semester. I mean, as a teacher of 40 years, it was a chance to begin again and get it right. No, and get it better.
That's less a joke than we think, isn't it?
That was supposed to be a joke, but when I thought about it, well, wait a minute. But no, a new beginning, new classes, always exciting, new topics, new ideas, and always some challenging assignments. We're known for our standards here of academic quality, and so it's worth your time, and of course, the counseling department here, the counseling division, is got a variety of things. Is there also some one credit hour classes that you still do? There used to be some like career guidance classes. I haven't looked at the schedule recently.
Well, the counseling class, the counseling office offers. Yes, we have a one credit hour career exploration class.
Exploration.
And okay. It's pretty much designed for individuals who haven't quite found their direction, mm-hmm. or individuals who are trying to refine their direction.
So sort of like a sort of guided resource, research with making resources available, but also taking maybe some standardized assessment test.
Yes.
I know what was very helpful for me in high school, other than all the tests to test science and math knowledge, was something that then was called a directional aptitude test that really turned me around completely in high school, turned me from an idea of being a scientist engineer to a teacher.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was quite subtle, because I thought I was smart at trying to figure out what the questions were about, but they were all about how you would enjoy the actual daily career. Would you enjoy working in that field on a daily basis? And I found that so helpful, and it was just totally revealing. So counselors can help you. There are a variety of tools and ideas there. Well, you were here, though, today about a very special upcoming workshop seminar, and we promoted it in the past. This is one, I guess you do two a year, non-traditional jobs. And we mean non-traditional jobs for one gender or the other.
Correct.
And this time around, tell us about non-traditional jobs for women.
Correct. This is our Imagine the Possibility, non-traditional careers for women in technology. And this is our fifth annual event. And we always appreciate the opportunity to come into the station. It has made a difference in getting the word out to individuals about this event. And it's pretty much designed to introduce women to those areas of work that historically have been non-traditional to women. And some of the programs that we will be featuring during our event on November the 17th, industrial drafting, we have architecture, we have computers, we have manufacturing, hospitality. So we have all of these folks coming together, And there will be group discussion. And the other neat thing about it is they have an opportunity to actually go into the labs and see what goes on in these programs.
In our own instructional areas here on campus. Yeah.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And we're very fortunate to have students participate in this. We have a woman student in our industrial drafting program who will be doing demonstrations during that portion of the program. We anticipate a student coming in to speak to her experience in the law enforcement area. So she will be doing some presenting. We have a keynote speaker, former Henry Ford Community College student, graduate, who is in security work. But her background in terms of all of the kinds of things that she has done in pursuing an education are very, very interesting. So she will be our keynote speaker.
Great.
I got to say,
at the outset, this is a free workshop. Free, right?
Absolutely
no charge.
Absolutely free.
You'd probably like to know in advance if they want to attend, so you can plan on, cookies in the morning or something for
them. Well, we're going to have more than cookies.
Oh, I bet you will.
Much more than cookies.
We're going to have a free continental breakfast.
Well, I have to wait my turn until next semester.
Muffins and coffee and juice.
Diane Green, Associate Dean of HSCC Counseling, special program coming up Wednesday, November 17th. Put it on your calendars or tell people about it. Non-traditional jobs for women. Exploration of a number of significant careers where, you know, you just might not think about it, based on, knowledge in the media or whatever. You might pass some of these things over if you're a woman. I know it was always unfortunate, but when I was growing up, it's surprising that women typically weren't elementary school teachers.
Mm-hmm. That's changed a bit.
Or nurses.
Yeah. Right, yeah. Women?
Really?
Yeah.
They weren't nurses usually? Nurses for men.
But, okay. I misunderstood the direction you were moving in.
No, all of my elementary school teachers were, maybe it was the other way around. That's right. They were all women at elementary level, and it became more male as you got in the higher grades. But I had a young man as a fourth grade teacher, and he was so dynamic and so, I mean, it was just... it was just wonderful. It was so exciting. And it was just because, I guess, he was the best of the best. He had to be better than all the women in order to get in there because, a man wants to be an elementary school teacher. So you got to break those boundaries and open up new perspectives for the careers and for the people served by them, too. Why don't you quickly, I think you mentioned five areas.
Mm-hmm.
That
yes,
can be represented.
I did.
Yes. Can you do it again?
Let me see if I can count them.
Okay.
We've got architectural construction technology. Mm-hmm. Computer information, and they're going to be focusing on computer assurance, and this is computer security. Mm-hmm. And this is a relatively new program here at Henry Ford.
Yeah, these things are not what you might think. I mean, CIS, as we call it, computer information services or support, you'd think of programming or HTML coding or something like that, but there's other areas that are really opening up, and like there's no barriers to it. And maybe the old-fashioned math anxiety issue, for men or women, it's not there in that career area as much as you might think. So it's great. And you mentioned criminal justice,
justice, and we have energy technology. We have hospitality and culinary arts. We have industrial drafting, and we have manufacturing systems productivity, which moves into the CNN area of work as well.
Okay. All right. So, again, on campus, Wednesday, November 17th, if they just want to show up, they could maybe
come at the
last second.
Yes.
You don't have to call ahead necessarily, folks. Which building do they go to on the campus?
It's going
to
be the Patterson Technology Building.
Okay. It's a little back from Evergreen Road at the sort of west side of our campus. Very noticeable. It's got bright red paint on it most everywhere and a big single column.
Silo-looking.
Whatever it is. Although next to it, to their credit, I think they've got some solar panels. And they had a windmill, but it wasn't working.
It wasn't windy that day, probably. It's working. And there's parking in the north parking lot, directly in front of the building.
Right, yeah. It's no problem. You just got to get back to the back of the lot, drive around to the back. So it's the Patterson Technical Building, Henry Ford Community College, main campus on Evergreen Road, just south of Ford Road. And what time does it start? Wednesday, November 17th. What time should they get there?
Well, we start the registration and continental breakfast at 8 a.m. And there is a free lunch, lots of door prizes at the end. Well,
Dennis will be there. Oh, it's for women. I'm sorry, Dennis.
I have a wig.
I'll tell you about it.
You'll tell me about it.
Amy, we got a box lunch. That's right.
Yeah,
that's
Amy
right.
needs a job. So,
And individuals who want to register, and we encourage that to make sure we have sufficient food to service the numbers, they will be contacting Brenda Redinger at 313-845-9617.
I wrote that down. Brenda R. at 313-845-9617. We'll mention that again later. This is the non-traditional jobs for women, special workshop seminar program, continental breakfast, free lunch. Boy, you're going to get a lot of homeless coming to this, too.
hey, I'm not homeless.
Always a great... not yet.
Not yet. Okay. Not until after the
got to get that career
lunch.
Going. Well, we're having fun here, but
some of us are.
Yeah,
great job you've been doing, Diane, at getting the word out and getting people guided into the right classes here and programs. And this is a very special workshop concept. It's worked very well for. I mean, it's been very popular in the past. We hope we get a lot of people showing up for it for you and for themselves too. Thanks for being with us today on the Journal.
And thank you for having me.
Well, it's always a pleasure. We're going to be right back with more election updates. Diane Green, non-traditional jobs for women. We'll tell you more about it again later.
According to the latest safety reports, workplace injuries are on the decline in our country. Great! Only, it's untrue. Why? Because many burns, cuts, poisonings, and other on-the-job injuries are deliberately hidden from America's Occupational Safety and Health Agency. Last November, for example, the U.S. Government Accountability Office found widespread underreporting of the problem by company doctors and other health professionals. In a survey of 504 medical practitioners, more than half told investigators that they were pressured by bosses to downplay illnesses and injuries. More than a third said they were actually asked to provide insufficient treatment to workers so injuries would not have to be reported. And more than two-thirds knew of workers themselves who did not want their bosses to know of their injuries because the workers feared they'd be fired. Under OSHA rules, any injury that requires more medical treatment than first aid must be registered in a company's injury log. A high injury rate increases the company's worker compensation costs and can prevent it from qualifying for government contracts. So top executives pressure managers and company doctors to treat serious injuries with Band-Aids instead of stitches in order to keep them from being entered in the log. Also, get this. Corporate injury reports are based on the honor system. And from Wall Street to BP, we've seen how much honor there is in corporate world. While OSHA does conduct occasional audits of injury rates, workers themselves are rarely interviewed, leaving it up to corporate executives to tell the truth about the real danger level that exists in their workplaces. This is Jim Hightower saying, and of course, executives are not hot to do that. Every workplace can and should be made safe, but they won't be without honest reporting of conditions followed by real punishment of the violators.
Today's commentary is underwritten by Wiley & Sons, publisher of Hightower's new book titled Swim Against the Current, Even a Dead Fish Can Go with the Flow, now available wherever books are sold.
Thank you. That was Jim Hightower's, one of his commentaries for today, our friendly progressive analyst and updater of stories that are happening around the U.S. that you probably won't hear on any other media. That's what we're doing here, the new WHFR Journal, local news and alternative views, things that you wouldn't typically hear on other shows, either because they're so local in nature, like the post-election updates that I gave at the top of the hour, just for Dearborn votes alone. Where else would you hear that? And also, of course, the special guest that we have here. And today, an election winner we have in the studio with us, and I have to say very proudly, a WHFR staff member, a staff volunteer here that has his own show, a talk show, and we'll talk about that too. But I wanted to say, first of all, welcome to Ned Apigian, although Ned, you've been on the show as a co-host before with me, but Ned Apigian is the newly elected councilperson in Dearborn Heights. How does it feel, Ned?
Absolutely very good.
Don't hold back.
Sound a little tired, a little exhausted there, Ned.
I got to pay some debts. Which is standard, I guess.
Now, of course, you probably had to pay for your own campaign out of your own pocket.
Most of it, not all of it.
You didn't get any major corporate support?
No. The Chamber of Commerce looked me over, passed me by.
In local races, you usually would not get out of district like corporations or whatever unless there was a hot issue of some trash-burning company wanted to put their plant in town and they thought they could buy you off or something.
Well, up to this recent ruling by the Supreme Court, all checks have to be personal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You can't give a business check. So I don't know how this new ruling works. I think it has to do with giving to a particular PAC or something.
Well,
you can't accept corporate checks.
Really? Well, that's what you know. But it's definitely
or a business check. Somebody could have a business. But
yeah, yeah. There's definitely all kinds of different associations that put money in. I know George Duraney was criticized by taking money from outside his district.
Well, he can do that.
Yeah. Oh, you can do that. Yes, but I'm just saying. I don't know why you'd want to be criticized unless, obviously I know John Dingell's opinion, and of course he's a national figure from our 16th district here. But he saw no problems. I've talked to him personally on several times in the past 40 years about campaign financing, and he was unapologetic about taking money from anybody who wanted to give it to him. And I said, well, doesn't that sort of make you a little bit beholden to their point of view when it might come up later on votes? And he said, oh, no, not at all. I can vote any way I want to. Well, of course he can, but it's got to be in the back of his head, you know, what those
he's
totals are.
He's probably a funder of other candidates more so than a recipient of mm-hmm. Usually people that have
How do you think you got your message across for other local candidates that want to win? Do you have a lot of lawn signs? Or
actually, I didn't have any.
Okay, no lawn signs. Go door to door?
Yeah, my approach was a little different. I decided to write to everybody that voted in the primary.
Uh-huh.
So you can buy you go to your city clerk and you ask them, can I have a disc of... And it's $25. They'll give you a disc of anything you want. But if you want to go back the next day and ask for another category, it costs you another $25. But I first decided that I would take everybody who voted in the 2008 presidential election. But I decided that wasn't a smart idea. So that was a waste of $25 because a lot more people vote in presidential elections than they do gubernatorial.
Yeah. I think in Michigan we had over 40%. Was it 42? Or I thought I saw this morning 47% of registered voters in Michigan voted. Okay. Although in Detroit it was very bad. It was only 39% of registered voters, and that didn't help Democratic candidates because
sure.
Detroit usually
Absolutely.
Has a lot of Democratic registered voters.
Actually, I was looking at our race, and I think it was 40-some percent, too, somewhere. I brought some of the papers with me in case he wanted to give me exact numbers, but...
Yeah, well, I already announced at the top of the hour in your race, there wasn't more, and I'm just turning to it, did I write it down or not? There wasn't more than a couple hundred votes between you and Ms. Abdel Haq.
No, it was
your competition.
1,100. It was 6,400.
It was 1,100. So it was, it was a comfortable.
900.
She probably had lawn signs, too.
Comfortable majority, then.
She
yes, she did have
a lot
signs.
More than that.
Yeah. Okay. But you've run for this position several times before, and they sometimes say that name recognition. No, I think you were out for city council, at least in primary elections, for
yes,
a couple
but
times before,
the
too.
Most recent was the last year. Mm-hmm. I did a foolish thing and decided to run against four incumbents, which really is not very smart.
Yeah, but
when I realized, mm-hmm. I should have realized that this year's race, which I knew it was only
filling a vacancy,
an open seat of which the occupant occupant decided not to run.
At the outset, you had a 50-50 chance.
And
Ms. Abdel Haq had not been in office. She wasn't an incumbent either.
But she was in last year's melee with me against the four other.
So she had some name recognition from that.
Yeah, her name recognition was different than mine.
Well,
yeah,
no doubt.
No, but different, I mean by that.
So you think that what did it was your, besides your name recognition, the way that you got in touch with the voters by this mailing?
You know, the circumstances are always different because it depends who you're running against.
Mm-hmm.
Mrs. Abdel Haq won her second place in the. I won the primary.
Mm-hmm.
She came in second in the primary, and the person that came in third only lost by one vote. So mm-hmm. there was a recount in Dearborn Heights.
Yeah, I can imagine with that close.
The vote was, so there was a little publicity about that. So instead of losing by three, he ended up losing by one. Actually, he's a faculty member here at Henry Ford Community College.
I remember that, yeah. What do you think the key issue was in terms of talking to people during this campaign? What were you saying up front? Besides, of course, talking about your own background, and you do have extensive knowledge and skills in architecture and city planning and so on.
I don't think it's not like you're running a national office that there's a issue and you're for this issue and your opponent is for the other. When I decided to do this, first of all, my wife wasn't pleased about it, so she didn't know that I was in the race.
Why wasn't she pleased about it?
Well, because as you've mentioned, I've done this several times. I've ran for state rep when Dylan beat me in the primary. So this is primary elections, and I've run for county commissioner twice, once against Kavanaugh, but never became a candidate, losing in primaries.
Right. Well, is she happy now that you won?
Does she know?
Yeah, she knows now.
Well, that would explain no lawn signs.
I guess she's happy
to see him.
Right. You're absolutely right.
You know.
That was the reason.
Seriously? Wow.
I didn't have any. I had some from a previous election. I'm on the board of directors of a senior citizens building, and I had put them in the garage because I haven't got anywhere to put them. And the manager of the building decided to throw them away. And I said, why would you think I would put them in the garage if I intended to throwing them away? So I didn't have any, but I did have two. So I decided to end, I figured the genesis of this is that since I had run these races that I mentioned, county commissioners, and then I've run for council, and been in several primaries and not advanced, I think two primaries. Mm-hmm. But I think I was in one final and have lost. And so I knew that I had name recognition, and I understand the electorate because all they understand mostly is names.
And it's not name recognition as a loser. I mean, it's just getting your name out there. It's just eventually people say, I remember that from somewhere, and then they start associating what it means to them.
They don't know if you're Einstein. Mostly I would talk to people, and they would think I was elected. They would think I was the mayor, or they would think I was already a councilman. So most people lose sight. They just know names.
Mm-hmm.
And then they pick the name that sounds the best to them.
You, I think you mentioned to me that since you were filling a position, you were already that council person. You were sworn in, and did you already go to a council meeting, in fact?
Tuesday I'll be my first council meeting.
Coming
but
up
I'm
Tuesday,
not sworn in yet because the way the law was written, because the previous council person who was appointed to take the vacancy, he was appointed to take the vacancy till the next election. The election being November 2nd, and November 3rd, I went to the clerk's office, as people advised me, to say, swear me in.
Right, yeah.
And but due to some circumstances, she told me it couldn't be done until Monday. I went to the Human Resources Department. They got my Social Security number.
They'll probably need some paperwork on you.
I have to fill out some paperwork. Whenever there's a payroll or whenever that is, you get paid.
We've learned that swearing in is kind of important.
I think that
there have been some issues in Dearborn. They're still going on about even swearing in a volunteer for a commission.
That's right.
It's unbelievable. It's going to court now. There's court challenges.
I was kind of insistent.
So, yeah, don't.
Good for you.
I think the people I were talking to wanted the other person to win. They were a little testy with me, and I got a little testy. He said, "Why are you here?" I am here to be sworn in.
Yes.
Now.
I won. You don't understand.
Well, it will be exciting following your career, Ned, over there in Dearborn. Ned Apigian, the new elected council person in Dearborn Heights. Congratulations.
The big thing is getting reelected for the four-year term.
Well, and that's next year, right? Next November?
Yeah, it starts all over in April, because beginning in April, you need to get either pay $100 to be on the ballot. You can buy your way on the ballot. You can get 100 signatures, whichever you prefer.
Yeah.
But getting the 100 signatures puts $100 in your pocket, but it also gets you out talking to people.
Oh, yeah.
And seeing you.
That's always a good important.
Idea. Yeah.
Well, as I said, congratulations. And we want you to stay with us. We're going to make some comments about the election in general locally.
Oh, yeah. I got
but as long as you're talking... got your mouth moving there. In Dearborn Heights, they had two issues on the ballot. Charter was amended to divide the Parks and Recreation Department from the library. Now, that was approved, 7,500 to 6,000 votes. Was that really that controversial there? I mean, it's about 60-40 percent. Do you see any advantage or disadvantage?
There was a great advantage that it passed. The fear was that we would lose the recycling if it didn't pass. And recycling is important.
Well, that was another proposal.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. Yeah. You're talking about the library.
Yeah, the library is separated from Parks Recreation.
Right. Actually, it's a nomenclature thing that was kind of silly.
Uh-huh.
So it really didn't cost anything. It was a matter of separating two departments that were... The library was under the recreation department, which didn't make any sense. So...
Sometimes, you know, and I'm not
why
saying...
Why would 6,000 people vote against it? It tells you they don't understand...
Would the people at the top of that one department, because they only had like one person atop that former combined department, you would think they might, if they need some extra trees, they wouldn't buy as many books or something. There might be some... transfers back and forth that would be not nice. And now it's quite clear exactly what the library costs are and the functioning and the decisions made at the top of your new library department will be people that know and love libraries. So whether or not their budget goes up or down is another issue with the city council. But
I think the fact was they were just operating one way and they were administrative. The administrative CHARP wasn't a descriptive of the actual operation.
Yeah, well, I think just cleans up. So it was pretty much just a,
it's a harmless,
I say, a theoretical, a philosophical thing. There wasn't any real scandal
going on. There's no reason for anybody to have to vote against.
Although 40% voted against it, yes. now the recycling
that
and
tells
the refuge
something.
Yeah. And the refuge, is this just a renewal of the millage to continue the recycling that was already being done there?
It's a sanitation thing. It's not directed to recycling.
Okay.
But if it didn't pass, it would have jeopardized the recycling.
Yeah, it seems
is the
essential.
Tactic the city used in order to promote it, recycling being an important green environmental issue.
I was looking in the Dearborn paper, and I want to commend, we're going to switch to overview now of the elections, and we'll let Dennis and Amy jump in too.
Sure.
But I was looking at the Dearborn Press and Guide from the last Sunday, the 31st. And this is the Dearborn Press and Guide that I get at my house. That might be a Dearborn edition that's not quite the same as Dearborn
Heights. Sunday is the same, I think.
Okay. Well, they didn't make a recommendation between you and Ms. Abdelhak. They did talk about in Dearborn Heights
that
you should vote on the proposals, but they didn't say who they prefer there. I thought it was interesting. They preferred George Durrani over Serini. Whereas
I think the news in the Free Press gave Serini the
yes, they did. And the Press and Guide editorial recommendation or endorsement, which I think was written by people above Tim Powers. Why? Because the style of the writing was different.
Mm-hmm.
I think the corporate bosses were the ones that sort of forced him to publish a recommendation for Snyder. Now, maybe Tim and the rest of the Press and Guide in Dearborn agreed with that.
Right.
Many people, of
you
course,
mean
did
the press
endorse
and guide
Snyder.
And also endorse Snyder?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I see.
Well, that's the Heritage.
That's what you're talking about, the parent paper. Company.
I think the parent company sort of said, here's your governor, our governor recommendation, and you just run it, because it was written differently. But then I know Tim took direct hand, along with the input from his staff, and these other recommendations, and I thought it was interesting. They supported Durrani over Serini. Mm-hmm. And just like me, and this means Tim and the others are very smart, were in favor of the Constitutional Convention. Now, I know it went down in flames, I think, because of the big rumor about, it's going to cost us $45 million and we're broke and we can't afford it.
But actually, I was for it myself, personally.
Yeah, and of course, our old curmudgeon at the Metro Times, Jack Lessenberry, was for it. And for very good reasons. It's
48 years
it's
old.
It's a chance. We haven't had a constitutional convention for 47, 48 years.
I remember it.
I did too. And it was very exciting. It went. You guys are too young.
62
the rest of the room
or 63 it was.
Wow. I think George Romney might have been governor then,
yeah,
or someone else. But
sure was,
but the point was, it's a chance to make these significant changes in our tax system, and some significant changes that even Bonero and Snyder were talking about have to be done, but they can't do it through a con now. They got to figure out how to get the legislature to come together to put it on the ballot for us.
Well, you're not going to see that.
No,
now.
You're not going to see it. Even though we need it, it's not. So we're not going to get significant major change that we need.
Right.
And they've even implied it, I think very clearly implied it, with our tax system.
Fear works over sensibility.
Exactly. Right. And that's exactly how it was played. Fear,
well,
economics.
Everybody that won this election won it.
And just the general
fear.
Impression. Hey, you don't want felons in politics for 20 years. That's, by the way, if you read it closely, it was only some kinds of felons in some kinds of jobs. Mm-hmm. Had to stay away for 20 years after they're serving their time. But in fact, if lawyers know this, and Powers did too, he was against that, because even though it's called the anti-Kwame law, Kwame Kilpatrick, we don't want him back, you know. It's basically against our democratic system. It's not fair to have a law like that. Just because you're a felon doesn't mean, if you served your time, shouldn't you have equal access to all jobs? That will be challenged in court by a few felons. It seriously will. I think it'll fall down. Now, I know everybody said, we don't want criminals in office. Well, you got criminals in office now of a variety of sorts, and I'm not going to mention names. Some convicted.
We don't have
some,
that much time.
Some unconvicted. Some unconvicted, but, you know, and convicted of minor felons. I mean, there's lesser felons, like my friend who discharged a weapon in Detroit in the middle of the night. There was an attack on his house, and he woke up suddenly. He had a registered gun, but he went out in the backyard, and there all these people around, and all pushing and shoving. They seemed to have guns, so he fired one shot up in the air. He was jumped on by 10 guys of the Detroit SWAT police team.
Oops.
Who were making a raid on the house. The other part of the house, you know, the duplex or whatever they call them, where another family lives.
Or a neighbor's house.
No, it was the same house.
Oh, my God.
But he was, but he just fired up, and, you know, what the hell's going on? And he was jumped down, and, of course, they charge him with trying to kill a police officer. And luckily, he didn't have to serve time for that. But discharging your pistol for just, you know, up in the air even.
Attention getting matters.
2 years. 2 years automatic in prison. No way to, I mean, it's just, that's Detroit law. No way to get out of that, no matter what the reason was. They did, after a lot of people testified, including myself, for him, he'd never been in trouble before, and he was dazed, and he fired the gun up, not at anyone, so they reduced the charge from trying to kill a police officer to just unlawful discharge, disturbing the peace with a gun, which is mandatory 2 years. And that he just couldn't find a job anywhere. Mm. And he had computer skills and everything. So that you know, and he was really a good guy. And so I think this is patently unfair and will be, I know it's going to be challenged. And Tim Powers, good for you. You recognize the fact of that, even though I know people, we don't want a criminal in office. They say, oh, my gosh, give them a break. Give the good people a break. If you don't want a criminal in office, then you study and research the backgrounds of the candidates, and then guess what? You don't vote for them.
Right. It's really simple.
Duh.
Well, in the same line, do you feel that the fact that felons can't vote now should be challenged?
Yeah, I do too. Yes. Right. Yeah. Until we get a majority of the public being felons, and then
And then you want to take that back when it's too late?
I've heard that prisoners vote in prison.
How does that happen?
Yeah, they can, yes.
Well, I thought felons can't
lose
their...
I don't know if they can do that in Michigan, but...
I thought felons lose their citizenship rights to vote.
It's well, that may be true, but they definitely don't lose the right to watch TV, and that's been challenged in court.
So you really Thank have goodness. To weigh out what's more important.
That's right. Yeah,
I can't vote in that election, but I can watch it. Okay,
yeah. Good. We don't know all the legal things there, but in general, that's going to be challenged by a number of organizations. As well as felons. Yes, there's rumbling in the studio here. So that's all I wanted to say, because the Press and Guide and the Times Herald, shame on you guys over there. Come on, Bewicks. Love you guys. I love your paper. I'm glad it exists, but no endorsements at all. Not at all. Zero, zilch, nothing, nobody, not anywhere, not any proposal, nothing local. I guess you just want to be totally objective and not have anybody cancel their subscription because you endorse somebody one way or the other.
I think Mr. Pepper called me, but now I understand he switched papers. So.
Really?
Oh, J. Patrick Pepper. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's in the Press and Guide. He's in the Press and Guide now. I think he is. He did a great overview.
Yes, I've seen.
In
it's like a one-man show.
In the 11-3 edition, even though they didn't have the results yet when he wrote it. And that's on their website, pressandguide.com. Or you can go to cityofdearborn.org in the city clerk's office. That's what I'm looking at is the printout there. Dennis, in terms of local races or state races especially, comments, thoughts about what it all means?
No.
Okay.
No, I mean, what it all means, that's funny. No, I mean, we had an opportunity to meet a lot of the candidates either on the phone or right here. And I have to tell you that that did, what I heard swayed how I felt. You know, we take an objective stance in here, but what I learned from those experiences when I went out to vote definitely were on my mind. So, I mean, as far as what it all means, I mean, that's, you've said it 100 times. These people are going to learn on the job, aren't they?
Yeah, I think so, because we have a lot of new people in office there.
Right.
Amy, do you have any overview comments? I got some specific things. Maybe you want to make comments on my specifics.
Well, just off of Dennis's comment, I mean, it tells you the medium matters. I mean, candidates got an opportunity to speak at length on, you know, this show. There aren't a lot of shows where you're going to hear comments more than, 30-second little clips.
Only this show and Craig Folly's show on WDET.
It's a very limited...
And Craig didn't catch all the people. We couldn't either, but he even went for so-called minority or third-party candidates.
Yeah.
God bless him.
Yes.
So they're on the ballot. They need a chance to get their message out. They're obviously not as well-funded because they're not in office. They don't get those special contributions from big companies or rich individual taxpayers because those people think, well, they don't have a chance of winning, so we won't even support them, when in fact, maybe some of their ideas are more important. Certainly, all ideas are important to be heard.
But I just wanted to say one thing. The gentleman we had on the show, Mr. Daryl Smith, who I know if you haven't already, you're going to talk about how...
At top of the hour, yes.
About how he's... he did better than we expected in light of the third party. And he had the same, I call it a guerrilla campaign approach, where he went door to door and he knocked, and that's how we became aware of him, by him knocking on my own home. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, there is a lot to be said with the street level marketing or whatever campaigning you want to call it, you know?
Yeah, one of the things that hurt Durrani and Cerini was, and I think maybe why Daryl got 1,000 votes or a lot of those votes, was because of the negative campaigning. A lot of people felt that, although I think George did the least amount of negative campaigning. For example, he did have a flyer that I got after I got several from Cerini and from Cerini's four children.
Right.
They sort of authored one.
That open letter, yep.
Yeah, saying that George was beating up their mama.
Yep.
I'm paraphrasing. Making it colloquial here.
Yes.
I didn't know where George said anything unfair. And then there was a mailing from George pointing out attendance is that Suzanne Cerini, over the last 4 years, missed 64 city council meetings. Was that not there to vote at all? And George only missed 3. Now, of course, she came back in an email to everybody in Dearborn. At least I got hers. I don't know how she got my email, but I got one from her. Saying that, she has a family. She has family responsibilities, and therefore that's why she missed 64 meetings. Well,
then
of course,
she shouldn't have the job.
Well, I'm saying there's a downside to that maybe she didn't realize, and I mean that was the wrong thing to point out. If she has to miss so much, good for her at being there for her family, mm-hmm. in a way. I mean, but that, she doesn't have time for full-time office in Lansing, right. away from home, maybe. So I don't think that helped her. And that was that negative campaigning? George only did it after all the other stuff went out. That was the last thing about right. the 64 absentees, and that's an objective fact. Mm. That's not negative campaign where you that's see somebody's negative. A witch or something, and they're not. You know, I mean, well, you know, when example. You talk
but
about their
really
morality or you lie. Imagine, or you lie about something about your candidate.
It's been done. Yeah.
It is more to almost the case with almost every negative ad. If you go to Truth in Ads in Michigan and several other websites that actually investigate these things, we're talking about slanted truths. That's you can understand. But then we're talking about massive exaggerations as well as insinuations. You know, implying things that, right. that are just wild and crazy. And then outright lies. Outright lies spoken as truths by a distinctive announcer voice.
Right.
And not mine, but someone else's a distinctive announcer voice. And people, well, if you don't have the facts, you kind of take it in and think, oh, well.
Well, nowadays you can say anything you want. It doesn't make any difference.
Just as an example, how about the way they twisted the fare tax? And just right. wipe their feet.
Sure.
On
exactly.
It, you
sure.
know, seriously.
Taxes will be raised 23%.
And I know that Rakowski, he lost to Gary Peters. But Peters, shame on him. His campaign misrepresented Rocky's statement about, oh, he's going to raise your taxes 23%, but he's going to eliminate the income tax. He's going to eliminate, you know, withholding taxes from jail. He's going to have prebate checks sent to you. So just so blatantly unfair to the Michigan fare tax as well as fare tax in general.
That's right.
I mean, that 23% figure, that comes from a national fare tax.
Right,
I mean, because
right.
Peters and Rocky would have, one or the other would have gone to Washington. And
well, that's what the small print said, too.
In Michigan, the Michigan fare tax would just get the sales tax out of there, 6%, and introduce a 9.4%, but right. that would eliminate withholding from your check to the state. It would cause rebate checks to come back to you to rebate the 9.4% that the people under 40,000 have to pay for food and drugs now. And I think almost everybody, if they fully understood those, would agree to them. I can't imagine, and they're not a raise in taxes, they're a replacement for the same amount. And eventually, and even Mike Huckabee, and who was the governor candidate that talked about the fare tax, and he didn't get it, but the guy from the western side of the state, the name starts with a P.
Hoekstra? No.
Yes, Hoekstra. Thank you. H. Okay,
oh,
it was close.
Peter, oh, Peter first
Hoekstra.
Name.
That's Peter Hoekstra. There we go. Yeah. That he was for the fare taxes, and so Republicans and Democrats, even progressives, could get behind the fare tax because it makes the tax visible.
Right.
All the time. You don't like tax, you want to pay less, then get that number with 23%, get it down to 22%,
right.
and figure out how you're going to pay for the other services. I mean, it gives everybody a target. It eliminates all the exceptions for business. It eliminates all the exceptions for people, no matter what. Talk about fair.
Right.
You know, 67,000 pages of U.S. tax code with exceptions and exemptions. And
you know, a classic example of something being taken out of context.
Boondoggle. Yeah.
You know, it was taken out of context.
Yes,
can
correct.
You lie by omission? I guess you could.
Yeah, you could lie, even though it's a lie. Who said you can't?
And I hate to point it out, but lying is not against the law.
It's
in not political
the
campaigns,
law.
The only two places is, of course, in court when you got to testify. You're going to say, I'm going to tell the
under
truth.
Under oath, sure.
So then if you don't tell the truth and they catch you, if they catch you, it's perjury and
sure.
you can go to jail. The other time is in some ads on TV that the Federal Trade Commission, FTC, can come after those people. You don't go to jail. And you don't necessarily do a fine if you said something that's untrue about your product. You have to do make goods usually.
Mm-hmm.
Now I think they can enforce it other ways. They can actually pull it off the air if it's really harmful, and they can put the maker in jail too. I think I heard of one case that happened. Kevin Trudeau in his infomercials.
But this doesn't apply to political ads, is that what you're
no,
saying?
No, not at all. You can lie right and left.
You
there's
can still
no crime.
Well,
there's no crime.
Oh, sure, you can
just
still do civil court.
Sure,
which I think is going on between Gary Peters and Rocky Ronkowski.
Yeah, you could sue for libel.
Yeah.
You should be able to.
Not a public
figure.
I
think there's some exceptions with political campaigning.
You're a public figure.
But I think because of that, the ads that
Peters.
Peters was running regarding that lawsuit with former business associates. That is,
he accused him of embezzlement.
That is probably true, but that doesn't mean it happened or that that case actually, you know, wasn't settled out of court or something.
Well, I don't think they've been resolved yet. He's being sued, so they're in process, which means he's not necessarily guilty or not guilty.
Right.
Anybody can sue for any reason, and a lot of times people do it just to hassle you, even though they know they're not going to win because they don't have the evidence. Interesting about how much lying and negative campaigning. What's the answer? Yes, there's an answer, folks, and people won't like it, but we media profs, with all our research, you've got to ban political ads. That's right. The short 30-second, 60-second TV ads, you've got to say you can't have them anymore. You can't buy them. All political communication will be fair and equal for free to all candidates.
Hmm. That's an interesting
idea. You avoid the 30- and 60-second slams. You give people 5 minutes. You give them a half hour, and you make it equal over time, and you make sure for all the debates, everybody for that office is an equal part of that debate, and the debates, of course, are free, don't cost anything. Canada does it this way, although they do allow some political ads that you pay for, too. But at least they have the government, the CBC, making it all fair and equal in that
equal
situation.
Access.
And, of course, they reduce the campaign cost for everybody because the campaign's only like 2, 3, or 4 weeks long, even for prime minister, that you just can't start campaigning. And then all of a sudden, everybody thinks about it, everybody researches it, everybody goes to vote, and everybody gets a fair chance at the national media, at the public media. And that's not happening even now. Thank you, WDET, a non-commercial NPR station. Boy, I hope they don't lose any funding with Republicans in office in Washington, because that, you know, we need non-commercial media. Obviously, we're speaking about ourselves too, but we do things they can't do, aren't willing to do, and you need to know. Tell your friends.
The problem is there isn't a discerning press anymore. All the political parties can buy a press, and they become their propaganda mouthpiece. They're not. The days are gone when Walter Cronkite can get up and say, that is not true, or any press person. Nobody does that.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to mention a couple of interesting things about the voting in Dearborn, at least here. In terms of minority parties, the people voting a straight party ticket, and this is true in Wayne County too, almost of people saying straight party, you know, Dem, Republican, whatever, 61% in Dearborn voted Democratic, and it was 60%, 62% in Wayne County.
I can't believe that it's that high for a straight party ticket.
Straight party Democratic voters are huge, whereas straight party Republicans, they're very picky, the Republicans, only 37% in Dearborn and in Wayne County. So the Republicans' voters are more independent
thinking,
because
they
want to vote individually, which means they're not voting for all Republicans all the way down the line. It's interesting that Republicans are not trusting enough of their own party, you can call it that, a party that doesn't have a platform.
The reason
is
they're a minority as a party. They have to do that.
I'm not sure why, but
as registered Republicans and Democrats, that's the reason for it.
But in Dearborn, we had 75 people voting straight party Green. Okay, and then Libertarian was only 49, and U.S. Taxpayers, Daryl, 37, and Natural Law Party was somewhere there in the ballot, and they voted straight party, on the state, straight party, even though they're just in Dearborn, 8 people for that. However, in the state, it was like reversed, and Natural Law got the most votes. Who knows why? Still not clear after years of following them in national campaigns who the heck they are. And Green did the worst in the state, not even as a straight party, but just in terms of votes. And again, it boggles my mind because the Green Party stands for the most important things in life. Clearly, up front, no holes barred, the environment, social justice for people, get out of wars that are pulling us down and have no clear purpose. And there's the fourth pillar that I forget, but it's real important. I'm just saying that in general.
Probably economic.
Yeah.
Yeah. In general, all of us, including Dems and Republicans, I think should be green You know, the four pillars should be in everybody's mind up there, except, you know, some people love war just for the sake of war. Oh, kill those bad people. We're not sure if they're really evil, but kill them anyway. You know, the more we kill, the fewer there are to fight us someday in the future or something. And you know, I don't know. I don't understand hawks. I don't understand people that want to go to war even for the slightest, smallest reason, even if you're not attacked or there's no threat. I just don't. Again, everybody knows if they listen to the show, I'm a pacifist, and it just I can't comprehend killing someone else, except maybe in self-defense if there's really no other option. Okay, in Dearborn also, for Governor Mickelson, Harley Mickelson, who we talked about, 183 votes, so not only straight party, but he got 183. Now, that's less than a percent, and Libertarians got less than a percent, and Matthias... and Levels, the U.S. taxpayer, got that. What I was also surprised was how many write-in ballots there were in Dearborn for almost every office. 30, 40, 50. Let's see, for state rep, there was 36 write-ins. State senator, which was Morris Hood and Doug Mitchell, that's east side of Dearborn and Detroit. Morris Hood won that close, 52-47. But there was 68 write-ins. 68 people. I mean, it takes an awful lot to write in a name, you know, either your own
right.
or somebody else you know.
But there's a difference between a legitimate
write-in. It's a protest.
You have to go to the clerk protest, and say you're going to be a write-in candidate, and then you can actually get enough people to vote for you. But you have to get
I think that's happening in Alaska, where there's actually a write-in candidate.
Well, yeah, but you could do that,
that
here, too.
These
write-ins don't count for anything.
This was the largest write-in. The Dearborn Public School Board member, and I mentioned the James Schoolmaster won, the incumbent, 50% to 49, but it was only a difference of 137 votes. But 95 people did a write-in.
Wow.
But there was 137 votes difference. If they would have voted for one or the other, it might or all,
sure.
they all
could have swayed.
It would have gotten so close that somebody would have called for a recount.
Yeah.
And what surprised me about recounts, the numbers always change.
Yeah. Why does it surprise you?
The numbers always change, and that's what Jocelyn Benson was saying too. We gotta get these elections a little sharper. How is it that in every recount the numbers change?
You're right.
There's a reason for that. When you're filling in the oval,
yeah,
and they do and you put
the
a
machine
dot in
might
the
not
dot.
Read it totally
or? Right it, if it's not filled in fully then the machine doesn't read it. But when you're going through the recount, you could see the person put his pencil in there and put a dot,
so they wouldn't just feed that same thing into the machine. They would
they would count that it says know that was the person's intention.
Well, I'm just afraid about other kinds of fraud too, and I
or
think
you, or somebody might have circled it as,
our election process has to be more secure, and it shouldn't be that a recount will always show a different result. Democracy.
What are you going to do in an electronic ballot? There is no way to recount.
Well, I know. That's why I want a receipt when I come out of there.
Yeah. The Canadians do it old-fashioned way, and they give you the
receipt of how I voted so I can go back in and give them that receipt and say, count this one again.
Right.
This is my receipt. Forget about what you previously was in there. This is my receipt of what I wanted. Here's just one of those philosophical questions, like what does it all mean? And we have to conclude. It's 2 o'clock. It's WHFR Dearborn and Highway 61 with Joanne Kay is coming right up
and
in a few moments. She'll be here momentarily. We know that. And so many people out there, she'll find a place to park. Don't worry. And we'll get started with that. Our own podcast cuts off about 2:02, so we can still blab and it'll be memorialized.
Quality blab.
Yeah. Somebody tell me how... because it's nonpartisan, did the two Republican-endorsed nonpartisan Supreme Court justices get in?
Because it's not nonpartisan.
Well, that's right. They had the advertising. This is Kelly and Young.
Right.
But I saw TV spots, and I didn't count them. Maybe Kelly and Young had more spots on.
A lot.
Yeah. Than Davis and Longford Morris.
Constantly. And do you remember the spots?
Oh, yeah.
And they kept saying
hard on crime.
Their name, Kelly and Young. Kelly and Young. And they would take the man on the street.
Right.
I saw that a few times a day.
It was memorable. It was. It just, burned in your mind.
So was the repetition.
Kelly and Young.
You know, the repetition.
It's that money issue that the chamber and all that secret money issue.
Right.
That's right. More money was spent by the Republicans, I'm sure, at least in those ads.
Sure.
And Bob Young has a really checkered career, and it's not false, the negative ads against him, that it's true, not on record, behind closed doors, with the other justices, a couple of them told. And